This is Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Saul Gonzalez from KQED's The California Report, sitting in for Steve Chiatakis. If you need one more ornament for your Christmas tree, you've come to the right shop.
Julehus, which is Danish for Christmas house. The attempt is to recreate a European Christmas with the old world flavor.
We're inside what may be the quaintest little Christmas store in Southern California. David Watts' family has owned Julehus for 53 years. His grandparents worked here, and now his sons help him out. The shop is in the quaint town of Solvang. Although you're in Santa Barbara County, it feels like you've stepped into a dream.
Solvang itself is a little village that's kind of like Brigadoon, if you remember the musical. It kind of appears out of the California fog, and it's in the midst of a Spanish California. You've got a Danish 17th century provincial town.
The Danish-themed tourist town is typically busy year-round, but Christmas is when it really pulls out all the stops. Even this year, when so many traditions and celebrations have had to get canceled due to the pandemic, business owners in Solvang are doing whatever they can to safely share the Christmas spirit with locals, and any tourists willing to defy state public health orders to stay home. KCRW's Catherine Barnes went to Solvang.
Solvang was founded back in 1911 by a group of Danes who traveled west to escape the Midwestern winters. They created a community that's attracted visitors ever since. It's almost hard to believe the theme town is real. It's so charming that a Lifetime movie set in Solvang just came out and is literally called A Very Charming Christmas Town.
Let's make a deal. You promised to show me the real Solvang, and I will do my best to enjoy the real Solvang.
I feel like I've gone to Danish village heaven.
100 lit-up trees line the sidewalks of the downtown, where you'll find a Danish bakery or chocolate shop on virtually every block. There's a Hans Christian Andersen Museum, a clog store, even a boutique specializing in cuckoo clocks. And yes, there's Julehus, a shop where Christmas is alive all year long. Glass ornaments, advent calendars, that one last shepherd you've been missing for your nativity scene. It's a Christmas lover's paradise. Watts says this year has been a mix of highs and lows.
We closed for 2.5 months and painted and refurbished and fixed up things that we had not had a chance to do for years. And then June 1st, when we opened up, it was only about a third of what we normally do for June, and then half for July. But it ramped up to where it was overwhelming.
That's when lots of Californians took summer road trips, which was a big help to little destination towns like this one.
We couldn't keep our stocks on the shelves. But it's dwindled down now.
The stay-at-home order announced earlier this month by the state has a lot to do with that, spurred by the surge in COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. For a blip, Solvang made national headlines when the outgoing mayor and city council voted to defy the state's restrictions and allow restaurants to reopen for dining. But that got nixed a week later, as county enforcement showed up and the new mayor quickly reversed the declaration. So like the rest of Southern California, restaurants are offering takeout only. On this windy day, some people are sitting on public benches and a few odd tables set up along the main drag, snorting down sweets. Hotels and inns are open to essential workers only, technically. Though, judging by the tourists here, that may be a wink-wink, nudge-nudge type situation. Stores are open to masked customers at limited capacity. Kim Jensen owns a Danish chocolate shop called Ingeborg's. He says Solvang is typically on the tour bus circuit for international travelers, but this year, visitors tend to come from right here in the state.
There are some that are coming and want to and planned it, and then others say that they were supposed to go somewhere else, so they decided to come to Solvang because they couldn't go to Europe, or they couldn't. So they said, hey, let's just get away for 2.5 hours.
That's what Christine Renee and her husband are doing. They came up from Thousand Oaks for the day after they heard on the news that Solvang was open for business. She says most of the local shops in their area are closed down.
this place feels like Christmas. And it's important to feel that in our hearts, particularly this year when things were closing down, to be able to come here. It's so cute. There's Christmas trees everywhere with the best danishes you could get anywhere. And it's just heartwarming.
Standing on the side of the road, munching on a pastry, she says a few hours in Solvang has improved her mental health.
I needed to come out and socialize to see people's faces and go into stores and shop. And I feel better, I feel lighter now. I really needed to do it. I'm glad we did it.
Business owners say foot traffic is down to about a fifth of what it typically is in December. Most tourists are following the governor's plea to stay home. And like the number of visitors, the number of festivities around town have also been slashed. Visit Solvang in December's past, and you'd see horse carriage rides, a parade, dancing ballerinas, carolers, Santa Claus in the park, and the annual Christmas tree lighting countdown. Here's what it sounded like last year.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1! Woo!
This year, all of that is canceled. But stroll down the streets as the sun goes down, the night gets chilly, and the lights turn on, and you'll see no shortage of Christmas spirit. From the trees in the park to the windmill, yes, windmill, by the post office, everything is adorned with bright lights. This year, at least, that'll have to be enough. For KCRW, I'm Catherine Barnes, and as the Danish would say, Glædelig Jul. Season's greetings.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Saul Gonzalez sitting in for Steve Giatakis. We know that when the spring school semester starts on January 11th in the new year, it'll be a lot like this year. Los Angeles Unified School campuses will still be closed. That means remote learning will continue, I'll bet with some changes, like more office hours and a half hour more of instruction on Mondays. That's the agreement reached recently by the LA Unified School District and the union representing teachers to try to improve distance learning. Negotiations continue on the much stickier issue of how to safely return to campuses. With all of that happening and the winter break here, we're going to check back with LAUSD teachers we've talked to many times throughout the year. They're Christy Collette. She's a third grade teacher at Newcastle Elementary. Hey, Christy.
Hi, how are you, Saul?
I'm well. And Aviva Alvarez-Zaxon, a world history and ethnic studies teacher at Hamilton High. Hello, Aviva.
Hi, Saul. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So before we dig into what's to come in the coming year, let's check back about how things have gone in the last several months. Christy, let's start with you. How would you compare the beginning of the school year to what you've experienced more recently?
Honestly, I think that I am extremely lucky. I think that distance learning has been going very well. My students are definitely succeeding very well in what we're asking of them.
And Aviva, how about you? We've heard from you before that you've adapted in order to keep up student engagement. Has that gotten even easier for you over time, or is it more challenging?
Oh, it's definitely gotten easier over time. And, you know, I think a lot of the existing challenges persist throughout the pandemic, some of them even getting worse depending on student situation. So when it comes to the teaching and the schoolwork, I think all of us, like teachers and students included, really, you know, came to adapt and figure out how to best make it work. And students showed extreme resilience in all of this. The things that continue to present challenges were all external factors, you know, like connectivity, housing issues, food issues, things like that. That was really the challenges that everyone was going through.
Yeah. And, you know, you teach at a very big urban campus, more than 2,500 students, I believe. I mean, do you think, generally speaking, those students are keeping up with the curriculum?
Oof, that's, I really think that, especially a large urban campus that's also extremely economically diverse, it really shifts depending on the demographic of students that you're talking about. Some students are bored, like they're not getting enough work, and some students are overwhelmed because they're taking all these AP classes. And then some students are just really struggling to just get by with anything, just trying to hear their teachers on Zoom, period. So it really, really depends, honestly.
And Christy, let's look ahead to the coming year. You've told us on the show before that you are not really psyched about returning to the classroom because of autoimmune problems that you've had, and that puts you in a high-risk category. So unless you get vaccinated, what are your plans for the coming weeks and months? Do you want to go back to the classroom unless you get a shot or not?
You know, that's a really tough question, because 100% I want nothing more than to be back in the classroom with my students. But it's very scary to think about having to go back and then putting my health into the hands of so many other people.
And, you know, a lot of parents want the teachers to return to the classroom. I'm sure you've heard some of that directly or indirectly. What's your response to that thinking? I mean, do you think people aren't putting themselves in the shoes of frontline teachers like yourself and understanding, you know, their own real world health concerns?
You know, I totally understand where parents are coming from. I am so thankful right now that my kids are college age and I don't have small children at home. I cannot imagine how difficult that is for parents. So I completely understand why they're in a hurry to get their kids back to school. And of course, I really do believe that that's what everybody wants, you know, to safely get the kids back into class. But I don't think parents realize that when we do go back, it's not going to look the way that they think it's going to.
What does that mean?
Meaning, you know, the kids are not going to be able to do simple things like use the classroom library. They're not going to be able to play with PE equipment, supplies and paper and collecting things from students. I don't think any of those things are going to be happening. I think that even when they do come back in the classroom, a ton of their work is still going to be on the computer.
Aviva, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I was just nodding along to everything Christy just said. I think one, pandemic tunnel vision is definitely a thing for a lot of families, where they just know what they need and just need to have that thing. But school is definitely not going to look like school for a while. I mean, even if you look at the plans, I teach high school, the plans for high school, students are planned to be cohorted in a classroom where they do basically distance learning in a group of 30 students somehow, with the teacher supervising, but also teaching their own course material. It's not going to look like school. It's just going to simply be a place to put the children for a while, until it is actually safe to thoroughly do all the things that we love about school, like collaborative learning with actual people together, like recess, like playing sports interactively. All of that's going to be a while out. Hmm.
And Aviva, as a high school teacher, can I get your reaction to a recent policy announcement? And that is the LA Unified School District is going to extend its no-fail policy. So students won't get F grades, at least until late January. What do you think about that?
I think a lot of things. I have had a lot of feelings about it. Primarily, I think it's a good idea. I also think it's something that could have been implemented years ago before the pandemic to give students an opportunity, if something happened throughout the year that caused them to fall behind, to catch up over a break period. I think that, intuitively, is a good plan. I did not like dropping it on us with 4 days left in the semester and about 6 days left to try to figure out how to make it happen. And that I did not like. I did not like the lack of a forward planning and ahead planning to it. But in general, this notion of giving students a little bit of extra time to try to pass a class, especially under these circumstances, made sense to me. I just wish it was planned more, or like given to us earlier.
How did you find out about it, just very briefly?
I found out about it in a staff meeting on Monday afternoon, right after I finished teaching my classes on Monday of the last week of school.
And Christy, your students are much younger there at your elementary school in Reseda. Grades aren't as obviously important. But your students, a lot of them come from working class families. They must be feeling the strain of this year, no? Just in other kinds of ways.
Oh, absolutely. You know, my school is in a lower socioeconomic area. And, you know, a lot of my students, you know, they're 8 and 9, and many of them are home by themselves during the day. You know, they don't have an adult necessarily even there with them to keep them on track or to ensure that they're even signing into class. So that's definitely a huge issue with the younger kids.
Hmm. What don't we know? What would you like people to know about the kids you're educating and what they've experienced the last few months?
For me, I just want people to know that I believe, and from the feedback that I'm getting from my parents, is that the kids are okay. You know, they're much more resilient than adults are. And I know I've said this before, but a lot of parents are very concerned that their kids are falling behind. You know, but they're falling behind in sort of arbitrary goals that we have set for them that are not even necessarily developmentally appropriate.
Hmm. And just a final question for each of you, and I'll start with you first, Aviva. Your takeaway from this year from hell that we've had, what's that been like? What are your final thoughts about this year in education from the perspective of a classroom teacher?
I think just generally that like when they teach you to adapt when you go through teacher education programs, that can go a lot of different ways on having to adapt. But with that also, I think I've just learned a lot about what is most important in teaching. And that comes in what I miss from teaching, which is actually interacting with students, but also making those connections and taking care of my students as best as I possibly can. That's the priority. And then the learning comes easier when our students feel taken care of.
Hmm. And Christy, same question, your parting thoughts about 2020 as a classroom teacher?
Well, I completely agree with what Aviva just said, is that teaching, what I have realized, really comes down to the relationships that you're building with your students. And either in the classroom or online, it's those relationships that open up kids to learn more. And that's what's really important.
All right. That is Christy Collette. She's a third grade teacher at Newcastle Elementary School in Reseda. And Aviva Alvarez-Zaxon is a world history and ethnic studies teacher at Hamilton High School. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And you're listening to Greater LA. I'm Saul Gonzalez, sitting in for Steve Chiatakis. Lots of people in Southern California right now are hurting and need a helping hand because of the pandemic. Maybe it's a job, or mental health care, or a place to live, or even just a bag of groceries. I bet many of you listening, even if you're struggling yourselves, want to do something to help others. But where to begin, right? And if you want to volunteer your time and services, how do you do that while social distancing and protecting your own health? Here to help us figure some of that out is Natana Cabanes. She's the Vice President of Strategic Partnerships at LA Works, a volunteer action center that acts as a hub for community projects all around Greater LA. Thanks so much for joining us, Natana.
Thank you for having me, Saul.
So just remind us again of the need out there among charitable groups.
I don't think any of us have seen this moment before. So none of us have seen the needs quite like they are today. What we are seeing is homelessness, which was already at crisis level, exponentially increasing, food insecurity exponentially increasing. We now have needs for COVID testing site support that we've never had before, mask making needs. So this is a new world that we're responding to.
So pandemic or no pandemic, you can still write out a check, still use your credit card to contribute to your favorite charitable organization. But what if you want to be more active? You want to volunteer your time or your talents? How do you think people should do that and do it safely considering the pandemic?
I think you have to ask yourself what your comfort level is, whether or not you want to do something in person. Many nonprofits are watching their ways of being COVID safe in an in-person place. So there are a lot of in-person opportunities, but if you're not comfortable going out, there also are virtual opportunities available. You can do hygiene kit drives right now. It's the winter time. So a lot of our shelters are in need of blankets and socks and hygiene products. So that's a good thing you can do from home safely. You can also do a lot of skilled volunteering from your home. So it really depends on what your comfort level is at the moment.
So could you talk more about that skill volunteering? Let's say you have a particular skill. It's graphic arts, or you're a marriage counselor. What advice would you give to people about how to apply those skills right now to help others while staying at home or staying at least 6 feet away from them?
We have a landing page, a pro bono landing page that lists a lot of those skilled volunteer opportunities. But a lot of nonprofits, for instance, think about grant writing. If you're a writer, right now, nonprofits are going to be facing an economic instability. And so grant writing is a major need right now. So also marketing or any sort of development, digital media, graphic design. There's a huge need for any of those skills because nonprofits are notoriously understaffed and underfunded, and there's a real opportunity there. But I would say start with going to our LAWorks.com pro bono page, and you can find a lot of skilled volunteering from that spot.
And if people are still comfortable volunteering in person, venturing out someplace and, you know, and contributing their labor or their talent, what places right now need that the most, that kind of help?
We want to drive most volunteers that are comfortable volunteering in person to our COVID testing sites and our food security, food pantry, food distribution sites. They're in huge need at the moment. And if you can volunteer in person, please consider volunteering in person at one of those locations.
And then turning from volunteering in some way, either virtually or in person someplace, what if you do just want to give financially? You do want to take out that checkbook or your credit card. And this is something I know I encounter every year is like, okay, how do I know that the organization I want to contribute to or I'm interested in contributing to is going to spend that money wisely and not spend it on, you know, office perks for the staff, something like that? What do you suggest for people to do?
We have a lot of resources available. There's GuideStar and Charity Navigator that actually publish the nonprofit financials for any nonprofit. But even those are actually misleading. So I, on a personal level, really look at who is in my community doing the work for the community. And there are a lot of really amazing community centers in LA that are doing this work. So a lot of faith-based agencies, I'm thinking of Friends of the Family and KYCC and Children's Institute, a lot of Jewish Family Services. These agencies are out there today and they're trying to make sure that the community's needs are met.
How do you think the pandemic has reshaped the world you're in, charitable work and volunteering? I mean, do you see that world changing from a pre-pandemic to a post-pandemic for good?
I think that a lot of nonprofits have experienced their emergency stress test in this moment. And so the ones that have been flexible and really able to shift their programming and also keep their lights on are going to be the ones that really serve the needs of the community. And so in that way, I've personally experienced a shift in how we've needed to respond. It's really been a boots on the ground experience where we are really trying to identify those needs and really trying to meet those needs in an emergency response that we actually never needed to do before.
All right. That is Natana Cabanes, the Vice President of Strategic Partnerships at LA Works. It's a volunteer action center that serves greater LA and has been doing great work in this city since the early 1990s. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can find out more about LA Works by going to the organization's website at laworks.com. That'll do it for us today. And as we near the end of the year, we're asking for your support too. It's for KCRW's Drive to End 2020. If you've been inspired by KCRW, whether by eclectic music, a fascinating story, or simply to get through the day, please think about making a year-end gift now. When you do, your gift will be doubled thanks to a generous $25,000 challenge grant from KCRW board member Silas Myers. The deadline is tomorrow night, and we can't do it without you. So donate now at kcrw.com/give. And tomorrow, love them or dread them, holiday office parties are still happening during the pandemic, but just like everything else, virtually. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Tell us how you're doing and what your plans are for the holiday. You can also hear our stories there and subscribe to the podcast as well at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Rebecca Mooney, Sonia Geis, Paul Smith, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Joni Adler, Sue Margulies, and Evan George all made the show happen today. I'm Saul Gonzalez. Thanks for your time and attention. Please stay safe, stay home as much as you can, wear a mask, be responsible, all that good stuff. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.